Welcome to the Language of Yoga. I'm Becca Schmidt. If you're like me, you love going to other teachers' yoga classes. I always think it's fun to see new sequences, hear inspiring new words, and frankly, what I really love is just not being in control. I love just practicing with another teacher with no responsibility whatsoever. But there's something I've been noticing more and more as I go to yoga teachers' classes. They are actually creating stumbling blocks for their students. So I want to talk a little bit about some of those stumbling blocks. And maybe you recognize some of these yourself and say, oh gosh, that's me. Let's recognize some of these stumbling blocks, and then I'm going to offer a couple solutions to them. The first one I notice quite a lot, actually, is yoga teachers are not looking at their students. I see this probably more often with newer teachers than with highly experienced teachers. When a yoga teacher, maybe this is you, if you have your back to your students, you're giving them a really strong message and you're saying, I'm not here for you. I'm not authentically here for your practice. I might be distracted. I'm somewhere else, right? You're not looking at them. You do not see their eyes. And one thing that I think they are interpreting is, I'm literally turning my back on you. I don't think that's where we want to start and teach a class. No matter what you teach, you don't want to have your back to your students because then you don't really understand how they're receiving your content. You don't know how your words are landing. Face them. And I know it's hard sometimes to think about all the things you need to teach and at the same time connect with your students, but it really is essential if you're a yoga teacher. Yoga is a really nuanced lesson. A yoga teacher is watching for a couple things: good physical alignment, but they also have to pay attention to how their students are breathing and observe where a student might be holding some excess energy, right? When you are with your students, they're in a nonverbal conversation with you. So you have to see them. If you're looking the other way, even if you have a mirror, if you're looking away from them, not connecting with them, then you're really missing 100% of their nonverbal conversation back to you. The solution really is to learn how to mirror teach. And that is, you're looking at your students, and when you say right, it's your left. So you say, lift your right arm, and it's actually your left arm lifting, and so on and so forth. All right. So it's really important to learn that skill because then you can remain in good connection. You have a good eye contact, and you're just noticing how your words are landing for your students. One of the things that you want to be able to do is go back and forth between letting them watch you demonstrate something, but also be there to walk around the classroom. Some teachers choose only to walk around, and some teachers choose to demonstrate the whole time. I think there should be a nice mix of the two. Whenever I turn my back on my students, it's always very specific to watch what I'm doing with my shoulder blades, watch where my back foot lands. So there's always a purpose. If I turn my back on you, it's because I want you to see something from the back. Otherwise, I'm facing you. Stumbling block number two, your students can't hear you. I personally have been guilty of this. I have sort of a soft voice, so I really have to put myself in the seat of the students. When I come into a room, if it's a new place where I'm teaching, I take a moment to kind of understand the acoustics of the room. I read the room, if you will. And then you look at the people in the class. You read not only the environment, but the people there. Maybe you have a few people who are a little older, who might be subject to a little hearing loss, whatever the reason is. Or maybe somebody's by the door and there's a lot of commotion outside the door. So just be really aware of the seat of the student before you start. Funny story is that I teach a lot of outdoor yoga and we live near the airport. So there are a lot of airplanes that go by. So I'm kind of famous for when I'm teaching, I'll look up and out of my peripheral, I can see there's a giant 747 coming our way. I just tell my students, hey, there's a plane about to come by, so let's breathe in our mountain pose. Let's take our 5 breaths in mountain pose. And they usually know exactly why, but it becomes a reason for reflection and a pause. So I work it into my class. I've also taught and taken classes where it might be at a gym and you hear a lot of gym noises, clinking weights outside. You do have to adapt to a certain point to those outside noises. And sometimes that can actually be a lesson in itself to be more in the here and the now, to bring your full attention to your own mat and not to the outside world. Even though the moving practice of the asana is not necessarily considered meditation, but meditation is the cessation of the fluctuation of the mind. We want to not have the mind going all over the place if it doesn't pertain to our practice. So this is actually an opportunity for teaching that. Another reason students might not be able to hear you is your music. We're all guilty of this. We decide that we're going to play some really funky stuff and some really powerful words, and we're going to impress all of our students. But guess what? If the students can't hear you over this music, you're losing the whole purpose of having that music. So if you do want to have a very impactful song, then plan a pose around it. Your breath cues, your positional cues, where that's essential. Where you might use a song with more heavy lyrics is when once you lie down and you're maybe in a pigeon pose on your back, where you're going to hold a pose for a little bit and your students can reflect and hear the words to that song. But generally, I think it's respectful not to use music that has a lot of vocals. Some people just don't relate to that. They may not like a certain genre of music. It may pull away from a person's practice rather than add to it. And I've been on both sides so much. I've been in classes where I thought, wow, that song was moving. It made me cry. It was beautiful. And then another class, I'll be thinking, wow, that song had some expletives and it really got under my skin. I did not enjoy that part of class at all. Just be aware of how music can directly affect your students and their own practice. The third stumbling block or hurdle, sometimes I call it, and this is a really big one, but teachers who want to show off, right? But really, a good teacher is not doing that kind of thing. They're not doing every single pose at the extreme level because they're there to coach the students. They're there to help the students get to those levels if they desire. What I like to do is encourage the teachers, one, to let that go. Go practice on your own time. Go practice by taking other classes with other teachers. And when you're here to teach a class, be fully present in that. Look your students in the eye, connect with them, learn their names. Even if you teach new classes all the time with new students, take a moment to introduce yourself, find some kind of connection. Maybe you even figure out a way to remember their name or jot it on a piece of paper and say, Sally's on the second mat from the left and Bob's next to her and Jane is next to her. So you have a way to connect them. So you're not saying, hey, you, or you're not talking more globally. You're saying, Sally, beautiful energy. I love the way your hands are outstretched. You're really grasping this pose. You're really getting this pose. You can get fairly personal with your students as well. If you know them very, very well, then you might have an opportunity to compare their poses week after week. David, your half moon pose looks like it's flowing better. You're getting into it a little bit with more ease than ever before. I'm proud of you. Good job. But you can't do that if you don't take time to connect with your students. This fourth stumbling block is you're confusing your students with what you say. I attended a class fairly recently where the teacher, the instructor, said the word back for all kinds of references. Back there, go back here, take it back forward. And by the time I was out of that, just even 5 minutes of the class, I was waiting for her to say the word back again. I was so obsessed with, I don't understand what the references are. And I kind of did understand, but it was still too many words. It wasn't appropriate. She said, bring your hands back forward, arms go back up, back into a twist, now back out of your twist, back your hands to your feet. And then, of course, the physical references, your back leg or back of the mat. What I'm suggesting here is that you choose your words. And the word back is one of the ones that is overused. This is my simple fix. When you're using the word back, refer to the human spine, the back body of the person, right? So lie on your back, feel lengthening happening in your back from your sacrum to your neck. You reserve that word back for a physical back, all right? And then if you have other words like return to the neutral space or return to the front of your mat, return to mountain pose, then that's an opportunity. You can use a different word, okay? So just thinking about your words. Something else I notice, even from more experienced teachers, is language that makes it sound like a student has more than one of something, like a head or a neck or a heart or a spine. They're talking globally when you need to talk very personally. Instead of saying, turn your heads to the right, lie on your backs, bring your hands to your heart, you hear it that the plural is meant for a lot of people. You want to talk to your students who are in the class as they are one person, not a collective. Bring your hand to your heart. Lie on your back. Turn your head. Lift your head. That's something I think is a very, very easy fix, just to talk to people as if you're talking to one person, not a collective. And I think that's a very, very easy fix, not to talk to the crowd. Something else that comes up in this language of cueing is sometimes people don't know their right from their left. And it's not something that happens when you turn 40 and you suddenly forget left from right. It is just sometimes the way people are made. They just don't have a good context of which is my left side, which is my right side. A lot of poses can be done without any sort of reference to right side or left side. For instance, flying cat is one of those. You start in your table pose and you ask them to lift one arm, reach forward with one arm. Now extend your opposite leg so you are in opposition. You don't have to say right arm, left leg, because that automatically frustrates some people. And then they go into this spiral. I must be doing it wrong. They look around and they say, everyone else is doing it right. I'm doing it wrong. I like to tell them up front, just choose. Choose which arm you want to extend. I do this in a lot of balance poses as well. We're going to do tree pose. Lift one leg. Place your foot on your calf, breathe 5 beautiful breaths, exit the pose, and change sides. So nobody gets hung up on which leg is which. And then you can just say, go to your second side, anything like that, switch. That's one way to get over that left-right hurdle. And even a pose like a twist. If you do want all your students twisting in the same direction. Let's say you're mirror teaching, you want everybody to twist to the right, and you're twisting to the left to guide them. What you want to do is find something on that right wall. Maybe it's the green wall. Maybe it's the wall that has the clock on it or the lotus on it. And you say, everyone twist toward the lotus. And then you're up there twisting toward the lotus as well. It gives them reference points rather than a right or a left. another stumbling block is not giving your students options. You may have students who have been taking yoga for 15 years. Maybe they can do all sorts of things that the person next to them on the mat is brand new and they're unfamiliar with the pose itself, let alone the advanced variations of the pose. A teacher can be a really good guide in this respect. A pose like dancer pose is the extreme variation is to grab your leg and pull it up to the sky, and then your other arm is reach forward and your heart is open. But not everybody can even grab their leg in the back. So you want to give them variations. You want to start with one hand extended and the opposite leg extended. Then if you want to continue building your pose, you say it like that. If you're building your pose deeper, we'll have 10 more breaths to continue building this pose. And then you as the instructor who they're watching can then go to level 2. And then for some of your students, you're going to level 3. But guess what? If none of your students, maybe you're teaching just 3 people first day of yoga, you're not going to even show them level 3 because they can't do it. And it only discourages people. And if they try to do a pose that you as a teacher, as their instructor, know that they're not ready for that, they can injure themselves. You want to protect them. With all that said, one of the best ways you can develop your skills as a teacher is not to record yourself teaching, but to record your students. With their permission, you can turn the camera around to your students. Maybe you do this with a small group and you take the full hour, you cue that class, and then you go back and you watch the video. You will learn a lot. You're going to see all the times where your students are looking at you and thinking, what? I don't know what she meant by that. I don't know what she's saying. I can't hear her. I can't see her. You're going to see people, if they can't see you, you're going to see people sort of taking their heads to one side. If they can't hear you, they're going to scrunch their faces a little bit. If they really don't know what you're talking about, they're not going to go in the pose very fast, or you're going to see some delays. It's brutal. It's absolutely brutal to really look at how your words are landing on your students because you don't notice it in real time. The only way to really let it soak in is if you see it after the fact. And then you take some notes and you figure out, how could I have cued that pose better? How could I have made all of my students feel more comfortable? Maybe you start with breath work and people are looking around and they don't really care to be doing breath work. Maybe that's something you need to set up better. Or maybe you do your breath work at the end. You tweak your classes by the reactions of your students. I always have this vision in mind of if you are really not connected, your students can be doing anything, especially if you're not looking at them. They could be back there knitting a sweater. They have to connect with the teacher in order to have a good class experience. You also might see people looking at their watches. You can just tell when people are distracted, but that's not always obvious real time. The final thing that you might look into doing is talking with fellow yoga teachers and allow them to do an assessment. Invite them to your class and say, hey, I'm really struggling with theming a class. I'm struggling with connecting with my students, or I'm struggling with my students really following me. They seem really distracted. I'm struggling with sequencing. Whatever that struggle might be, share that with another yoga teacher and say, come to my class. Observe where I'm struggling and give me some advice. We have to team up sometimes and offer our experience, our wisdom. Even if we're a junior yoga teacher, we have something that we can offer to even a more experienced yoga teacher. So connect in that way. Don't be afraid. I've been in environments where yoga instructors are really, really timid about having other instructors in their class because they feel judged and like, oh my gosh, they're going to think I'm a terrible teacher, or they're going to be overly critical. But really, the way we practice yoga, it should be with kindness and generosity and to offer help to other yoga teachers. And they can offer you really specific changes. I hope that helped understanding what some of those blocks are from a student's perspective, and then a few solutions on how you can change that. So every time you teach a class, it was better than the class you taught before. Thank you so much for listening. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti Om.